Okay. So, yeah, we're going to again take a very high-level view of networks now. It's a view that's handy, again, just so that when you get down into more details, you have something to somewhere to bin up all those details. Okay. So, at a very abstract level, networks offer data transport services, which are classified as reliable or unreliable. And they offer different versions of connectivity. So they're either connection-oriented or connectionless. And all that means is that you either set up a connection between the sender and receiver that has duration, or you don't, you send things, sorry, that's connection-oriented, or you send things sort of message by message, and each one doesn't have anything to do with the other one that came before. Okay. So all these things about QoS and security, they're add-ons. Okay. So, you can categorize any application according to what they'd like for these anyway. And so, again, you have connection-oriented, which tends to be for larger, bulkier pieces of data. And again, this can be either reliable or unreliable, or connectionless can be reliable or unreliable. Okay, so again, in terms of what suits what, if you have a voice stream, then well, connection-oriented is nice because you are providing a steady flow of data that you want to get there at or sort of a predictable rate. But again, it doesn't have to be 100% reliable. If you're sending a control message, well, you're only sending one little bit of data, so connection is as good as anything, but you know, it may or may not need to be reliable. Okay. So, the original networks were designed or optimized to transport one sort of data with one characteristics. So, one type of characteristics. So, again, telephone networks wanted to be connection-oriented, but they didn't have to be totally reliable. Data networks tended to be connectionless, but may or may not need reliability. Okay. So, the first big thing that you can do to support these is to look at how you allocate your resources. And as we sort of were talking about previously, we have two paradigms emerge: circuit switching or packet switching. So with circuit switching, you make your connection, you allocate the resources along that connection, favors a connection-oriented service. Packet switching, you share all your links, you share the resources. And so again, it's going to favor connectionless delivery. And it's possible to provide a connectionless service or connection-oriented over a circuit switch network. It's possible to provide a connection-oriented service over a packet switch network. So, one is sort of the requirements of the applications. And then switching refers to how the actual implementation So quality of service, again, is sort of an optional extra in the view of most of these networks. Okay. And, well, certainly circuit switch networks have more predictable quality of service characteristics. Packet switch less so, and often there's, a good bit of thinking goes into how you make packet switching look a bit more like circuit switching. Again, as we go through the various types of various network examples, we'll see what quality of service support they provide. Okay, so again, and circuit switching makes an end-to-end connection. The resources are reserved for the entire length of that connection. They're not shared, although obviously the physical link may have the capacity to create multiple sublinks. Okay. So you get a circuit. Looks like just the data pipe, and you get predictable performance, but the penalty you pay is to have to set up, to have the call set up, and from the network perspective, if you're not using your circuit all the time, then it's a waste of resources. Okay. So again, any physical link can be divided up into multiple sublinks, and then each sublink would be assigned to a specific connection. And so the basic ways of dividing things up are you either divide up time, so each user gets a time slot, so it's like a round robin system. You get to send your data, then you get to send your data, then you send your data, then you send. Oops, that's frequency. Okay, so in frequency, basically divide up the spectrum, and each person sends their data into a different part of the spectrum. With time, again, you divide up time, each user will essentially do turn taking. Okay. So, those are pretty basic, and you would have seen these obviously in previous networks modules. Because of the sort of relative scarcity of spectrum, the relative scarcity of resources. For wireless networks, the cleverer schemes have been examined as well. So you have orthogonal frequency division multiplexing, which again makes better use of the spectrum. You have spread spectrum, each can either use time or frequency, but again, has characteristics that made better use of the spectrum for transmitting data. And, again, we'll look at those in the course of the module. But the basic idea for now is just, you could divide any link into subchannels, and then each subchannel is owned by a single individual. Okay. In general, for packet switching, that's not what happens. So packets aren't sent over a dedicated end-to-end link, but rather all of the packets will share the network resources. So while a packet's being transmitted, it has the full bandwidth, but it has to wait its turn for that transmission. Okay, and so that's handy because if the resources are available and there's a packet to send, then any packet that needs to be sent can be sent. Okay. It introduces other problems. In particular, you get now contention for the resources. So there can be more packets waiting to be sent than the link has the ability to send them out. And in that case, they queue and wait. And so that packet queue is adding additional delay for the packets. Even if the packet's the only one in the whole entire network, there are still additional delays introduced by the store and forward method of transmitting packets. So packets at each node have to be fully received and then retransmitted. Okay, so even if there's no congestion, then you still have more delay. But you know, at high transmission speeds, this doesn't add too much to the overall delay. Okay. So again, at any given node, packets arrive and then they just wait to be sent out. Okay. If they're the first one, then they're received and retransmitted, so you have a single transmission time. If there's packets in front of them, well, then there's going to be more transmission times for them to wait. The simplest way of waiting is just first come, first served, so packets are transmitted out in order of arrival. One of the ways in which quality of service can be addressed is to change the order in which packets wait in the queue. So more important, packets are left to wait less long. Okay. So again, in terms of transmitting packets, if the packet has a length L and transmission rate of R, then the transmission time is L over R. And if you have a circuit switch system, you transmit the packet here, and it would just travel till it reached its destination, more or less. In a packet switch system, it's transmitted when it reaches the first node. It has to be fully received and then fully transmitted again. So you're at this node, you add another transmission delay of L over R. Then at the next node, you add another transmission delay of L over R. Okay, so you are adding up transmission delays. And again, if you have a high-speed link, typically this is minor compared to propagation. Okay. This sharing allows more users to use the network. So again, if we had a bunch of users wanting to use a 1 megabit per second link, and say they need 100 kilobits per second each, but they only need that 10% of the time. Now, if you use circuit switching, well, you'd have to set up this link, and you could only set up 10 of them, so 10 100 kilobit per second links. With packet switching, well, you don't restrict how many people can send into the network. But as an example, if you had 35 users, the probability that 10 of them were active at the same time is going to be very small anyway. So you can have all 35 users and you're adding only minimal delay to the system. Okay. So packet switching is tough on quality of service. With circuit switching, well, you can certainly guarantee things like bit rates. You just allocate enough, you know, the link capacity to achieve that bit rate. And your penalty is just going to be the connection setup. With packet switched networks, yeah, pretty much everything's up for grabs. Due to, again, the queuing delays added in the network. So depending on what they are, they can increase your loss rate, they can decrease your throughput, let's say. And furthermore, it adds not just, it adds unpredictability. So in general, both paradigms sort of have their pluses and their minuses. Okay, so the plus of packet switching is it's more efficient than the network. The minus is that you can have congestion and delays. Again, the circuit switch is less efficient for the network, but you can give guarantees. Okay. And again, at least in the single radio link, we'll see that we can play around with the allocation of resources to sort of try and address some of those problems. Okay, so again, that's a very abstract view of networks, really, really abstract view of networks. So they're doing this data transport, so you give them bits and they'll transfer them. They'll agree with you whether they set up a connection or not, whether they guarantee to get your data there or not. That's the only things pretty much they'll agree with you. Underlying that, again, you have how they're going to do that, how they allocate the resources so that the data moves, so it's either circuit switched or packet switched. Okay. And again, quite loosely, circuit switched is your classic telephone network, packet switched is your classic data network. And in this module, we'll be looking at, again, wireless networks that have arisen both from the telephone side and from the data side. So again, you'll see they've taken different approaches. Okay, now if we step back and look a bit more at packet switch networks, so packet transport networks, then they all tend to be constructed in a similar fashion, and that's the idea of the layered architecture. And so the idea here is, okay, so we have our packets and we want it to get from point A to point B. First thing we need to do pretty much is decide how we can send it along a single link. Once we figure that out, we gotta see how it can be sent along multiple links. Once we got that, well, how do we provide our end-to-end service? Can we provide a connection or not? And then how do we deliver these bits actually to applications? Okay, so you have a number of steps that need to be gone through. And so, again, a network, it's a very complex system, and it's been divided up pretty much to address these steps individually. And so again, if you think about any system, well, that's what you do. If you have a complex system, you break it up into simpler parts, and then you specify, so you have five parts, then you specify how all those parts need to interact with each other. And sort of the interesting or the main feature of the network architecture is that they interact with each other sequentially. So they go, and so you have these, you know, five steps, seven steps. They're addressed one after the other. And so that's where the idea of a layer comes in. Yeah, the communication is just from one to the next, to the next, to the next, and not in between in general. Okay. So for data networks, there are pretty much two things that spring to mind in terms of layered architecture. The first would be the OSI reference model, and so this was the attempt to describe all of the major concepts for layered architectures. Okay. And as it happens, I don't think I really... I did address it in the slide anyway. The second is the TCP/IP protocol suite, which again is designed in this layered fashion. Okay, and is an instantiation of the, such a model. Okay, and so. Looking first at our concrete example, TCP/IP, we have our architecture, and so that's telling us how the various pieces interact with each other, and then connected to each of these is a set of protocols, maybe more than one, which can be used to implement the functionality of each of these pieces. So if we start from the top, we have our application layer, and so this is the programs that want to communicate over a distance, and you know, people can write their own programs, but then there are also specified programs such as FTP, SMTP, HTTP, so things that have specifications written to them and have to adhere to those specifications. The transport layer, again, is the interface between the network, the applications and network. And so basically it allows you to specify whether you want a connection-oriented service or a connectionless service. Okay. And again, the two protocols, the two main protocols associated with it are TCP and UDP. Okay. So the application deals with the user, the transport layer is the interface, then you have the network layers, and it's their job to get packets from point A to point B. Okay. So the network layer is concerned with end-to-end routing, and again, the main protocol is IP, and the main thing that sort of is absolutely defines TCP/IP networks is the IP addressing scheme. Okay, so it gives you a universal way of identifying destinations. Okay, then that says how you traverse a number of links. Then you know you're down to needing to transfer data from link to link to link. Okay, and so this has sort of physical components and which transfers bits, and then a higher level component which transfers packets. Okay, and typically in the TCP/IP world, these two layers are sort of bundled and appear sort of as packages. Okay. And so again, the main idea behind the layered architecture is that data is going to travel up and down the stack, so up and down the layers, and the data is intended for various different layers. Okay. So if we start, we want to send a message from one application to another. We start with that message, and then as it travels down through each layer, a header gets added. So the original message is left alone. That's the concept of application encapsulation. And then the header information, again, is intended for corresponding layers, the same layer in remote locations. Okay. So, as now this segment is handed down, the header plus message for that segment is treated just as payload, and an additional header is added. And so, and again, the information from that header is intended for sort of corresponding network layers as you go through the network. And you do the same thing at the link layer, and then it travels through the network. Okay. Now, as it travels through the network, it won't, well, most likely won't travel all the way up the stack till it reaches its destination. At intermediate nodes, it just examines sort of enough to know where to send it next. So again, if you're say on you're trying to send something to an access point, you're going to just deal with the link layer. If you're farther or a local layer network, as you get farther into the core of the network, then you have to deal with the network layer. And again, as you get all the way through at the opposite end at the receiver layer, you'll deal with the transport and application layers. Yes?
Is each node and removes the headers for the data and that members everything back when it moves to different node?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so here again, the only header we have would be the link layer header. You'd strip it off, examine it, do what it has to do, and then add a new one as it goes to the next node. Okay. And so, again, that's TCP/IP, and that is pretty much the existing suite of network protocols. That's the internet for you, roughly. At the same time as these protocols were being implemented, again, a reference model, the OSI reference model, was being proposed. And this model is significant for a number of reasons. Well, first, what is it? It's, well, similar to the TCP/IP stack. It's got your physical link, network, and transport layers. There's not a completely exact, if you get into details, they don't correspond exactly to the TCP/IP ones, but close enough. Then the above transport layer got broken up into three different pieces: application, presentation, and session. And so presentation was would have handled things like encryption, compression. Session was sort of again handling higher level session issues like synchronization, data recovery, etc. And well, basically nobody could ever really find a good use for those, so it's not used. And again, since it doesn't exactly correspond to TCP/IP, there's no actual implementation of these different layers. Okay. Now, having said that, the model was the first place where the principles were articulated, particularly the ideas like of encapsulation, the ideas of virtual communication, so layers talking to their corresponding numbers. These were all articulated in the OSINT reference model. And frequently, you know, when you are discussing networks, people refer to their issues at various layers, and they're referring to the OSI layers. Okay. So again, it's worth just realizing again that the various models do exist. Okay. So again, that's sort of the end of general networks discussion. I guess the other thing I would sort of caution about in terms of the reference model is that we will be looking at cellular networks, which again are coming from the telephony side of things, and that's a circuit switched. At least it started out circuit switched. So this idea of layering does not really apply to circuit switching. Okay, this is a packet switched notion. We will talk about layers and circuit switch, but that's for what's called the control plane. That's for all the signaling that needs to be done to set up connections, not for the actual connections themselves. Okay. So, specific to wireless networks, what are we going to look at? Well, there's a lot of issues around signal transmission for wireless networks. How signals propagate, and in particular how the strength of the signal decreases with time, with distance, is a big issue for wireless networks. Again, if you think about wire, well, there is, signals do, the power, the strength does decrease over a wire, but it does it in a fairly predictable way, so you just, have maximum length of wire. It's much trickier with radio signals. Okay. Because it's much trickier, we try and come up with all sorts of clever techniques to improve our signal strength and to also improve the capacity of the system. Okay. So we'll spend a reasonable amount of time looking at just the signal transmission signals.
Okay.
The main interest we'll take in the data link layer, so actually point-to-point packet transmission, is in examining wireless LANs, and in particular, examining how wireless LANs share the radio spectrum. Okay. So how medium access control is achieved. We don't really do too much about networking, about end-to-end. Most of what we're doing is really that first access link. There are some issues that we can mention that we, again, we aren't really going to cover, but in terms of IP, so it, mobile IP allows devices to move from network to network while maintaining the same IP address. And again, typically, you have access networks, service providers, that IP address is typically tied to the network, so now more mechanism is needed to allow it to roam. Okay. Again, we're not going to worry too much about connectivity. It does play a role in quality of service, but and again, it can complicate things. Things can get complicated in a wireless setting. Just again, if you think about, for instance, TCP. TCP works best in a reliable setting. If you're losing packets a lot, then TCP has problems. And so, and wireless connections in general are less reliable. Okay. And the main thing in terms of applications layer, the application layer is the quality of service requirements. And again, we'll look at how various networks deal with that. But again, remember it's really a point-to-point version of quality of service support. Okay, so again, how applicable is a layered architecture in terms of wireless networks? It depends. Again, your original cellular networks are circuit switched. So there's a limited applicability there. We'll be looking at wireless LANs. They run, they again do this point-to-point connectivity, and so we will be examining well, layer two issues there. There are, if you are concerned with ad hoc networks, so networks formed of nodes connected wirelessly and just communicating with each other. Those have a lot of issues at the network layer, so there's a lot of issues about layering there, but we're not going to address that. We're looking more at the telephony side of things. Okay. And just to note, again, performance concerns that you see in wireless networks lead people to look at cross-layer protocols. So if you know something about the quality of your channel, it's possible that the information is, for instance, useful at the network layer without necessarily going through the data link layer. So passing information not just to your near neighbor can help. Again, we're not going to, that's a master's topic, not for here. Okay, so again, there's a lot of any basic network will cover what we've talked about so far. Now, just to wrap up a little bit, we'll say a few words about wireless networks, and again, you could ask, what's the difference between wired and wireless? The wires, but what does that mean for you? What that really gives you is mobility, okay? If all wireless was just an access, point-to-point connectivity issue, it wouldn't be that interesting. But what it's allowed is people carrying their smartphones, going sort of anywhere on the world, anywhere in the world, and maintaining their connectivity, and not having to stop and start. You can be on the train, from here to China, and working away or whatever, and without potentially, anyway, breaking connectivity. You can stream your movies. You can talk to your mother. You can send reports. You can do all these things on the moon, anywhere you like, in an ideal context. Okay. And so, that's the idea. Does it happen? More or less. But it's very complicated, and making it happen still tends to require cobbling together different solutions at different points in the day. Again, the difference between wired and wireless is, first of all, the wireless, and we will be taking a look at what it means, and radio, you're transmitting bits over a radio link, is somewhat different than transmitting links over, or transmitting bits over a wire, and in particular, there's an issue that, by its nature, this link is a shared medium. Okay, and so you got to figure out how you're sharing them out to individuals, and it's a medium that anybody can sense. Okay, you send a radio signal, somebody else will know it. Depending what you've done, they may or may not be able to make any sense of it, but they know it's there and they can use it. Okay. There's work to be done to sort of appreciate that. And then, of course, the second big issue about mobility, now that you don't have to plug into the wall somewhere, you can move. Ideally, again, you can maintain a connection as you, walk, you drive, you take the train, etc. And so there are issues then of how that connection gets maintained. Obviously, we're going to have to move from one access point to another access point. You can walk away, you're eventually going to get out of range of your access point. So, how do you do a handover? How do you seamlessly move, change from connected to one access point to another access point? And how do you know that there's always going to be an access point out there that you can connect to? Okay. So one of the huge things about cellular networks is that they do, they provide you that guarantee that wherever you go, there's always the next access point and the next access point that you can connect to. So there are, you know, again, challenges in doing that that are different than for wired networks. Okay. So in terms of devices, well, users want smartphones, they want things that do lots of things, but they have to be small and lightweight. And problem with small and lightweight these days tends to mainly be the battery. So how do you produce good batteries that can actually drive your applications for long enough, you know, to maintain, you know, it's not terribly useful if you, you know, exchange the plug in the wall that's your network connection for the plug in the wall that's your power connection. So power tends to be a big issue. The spectrum is finite, and it has to be shared out on lots of different applications. And because of that, you have regulatory bodies which are responsible for allocating the spectrum and indeed licensing the spectrum, and if they do that wrong, they can cause both technical and non-technical problems. So for instance, 3G licensing, the cost of licenses in Europe slowed down the rollout for years. Okay. The range that our things tend to want to work in is the gigahertz range. So again, this is a range that gives a good, you know, for the transmission techniques that we have and need, it gives a good rate and distance range. Okay. So that's, yeah, again, that's its only part of the total range. But again, all parts and even that part are shared out between a lot of different technologies. So in this gigahertz range, we say we like, you know, lots of different wireless solutions, and you also have non-communication technologies which come into play as well. So along some of the bandwidths used, it's the same thing that the microwave oven puts out, for instance. There's interference between there. Okay. Okay. And again, all of this is regulated. All of the spectrum allocation is regulated. That regulation is done on a country-by-country basis, and while in some cases they make attempts to coordinate with each other, it does not always happen. Okay, so there are issues in traveling from country to country, potentially, although it tends to beam itself into a number of bands, and these days phones tend to cover all of them anyway. But additionally, you know, radio signals are not going to respect borders, so that's okay. In the U.S., where you've got a good bit of the continent to yourself. But in places like Europe, where countries are closer together, they have come together and sort of agreed amongst themselves about the regulatory issues. So there's a number of bodies, that deal with these regulatory issues. Okay, so ETSI will attempt to ensure compatibility between various countries' standards, and then the ITU attempts to ensure compatibility worldwide. And so, again, I think the main place where you'll see these in play is then in the cellular world. We'll return to it there. We'll discuss, have those discussions. Okay. So anyway, there's a huge number of different types of radio networks, and this is not even a complete list. Everything's moved on since I made this slide. But again, depending on the application, they're allocated a certain range, or sorry, a certain spectrum. Again, depending on the application, there's different ranges versus different rates, so speeds. Okay. And so, in order to make all that work, again, we'll see there's a number of different technologies that have been used. Okay. And this refers again to how the data transmission is achieved and how the spectrum is split up to be shared among users. So it's a fairly non-uniform picture. Okay. So, again, performance is an issue. We have limited bandwidth. Again, if you want more speed, more bandwidth for a wired network, you add another fiber cable. Mm-hmm. There are, of course, issues to doing that, but you can always just keep adding cables. Okay, you can't add spectrum. It's there, and it's, we can try and use it more and more efficiently, but it's still a fixed resource. Okay. There's higher error rates because there are more opportunities to interfere with the signal. There can be larger fluctuations. Again, we'll see this particularly in the context of mobile applications. And so all of this makes it difficult to offer any 12U service guarantees. As I mentioned before, security is an issue because anybody can hear your signal, okay? Encryption has to be used to make sure they can't make sense of your signal. Additionally, your signal can be jammed, okay? So if somebody doesn't want your signal getting through, then they can seek to jam it. Okay. As I said, coverage and mobility are an issue. So your range is fixed, which again is fine if your user is stationary, but as they move, You're going to have to move them from one access point to another. And so, if you, obviously you can always put the access points close enough together, but then you introduce the idea of having interference between the transmitters, and so you have to then plan again how you're going to allocate your spectrum from access point to access point to access point. Additional to that, if you're moving, then somehow you need to be able to make the transfer. Okay. So again, we're going to look at a number of examples from wireless LANs to wireless broadband access, short-range access like Bluetooth, cellular access. So a lot of them are, you know, again, with the exception of cellular, spring up from the data networks, so the packet switch community. And so they all tend to adhere to the layered model. A lot of them are specified by the IEEE. And again, there are additional issues with layered modeling for wireless networks, but for the most part, we're not going to get into that. The layering does not apply to telephony networks. Okay, so again, it's not doesn't apply to circuit switched networks, although there are components which will look, you know, there are some similarities, and we'll see how that works. Okay. Our cellular networks, again, the big issue with them is that they're the only networks that provide large scale coverage. Okay, so large scale connectivity over, you know, again, the world, certainly a country. Okay. They arose from the telephony networks and are now going to a much more IP view of the world. Again, local area networks essentially just wireless alternatives to wired networks. They do allow you sort of mobility over a limited range, so it's great to be able to take your laptop from room to room, for instance. But again, you do make some sacrifices in terms of having to use wireless transmission. We'll be looking at all of these networks. We'll be looking at in the course of in more detail in the course of the module. Okay, so 802.11 again would be just a wireless alternative to a local area network. 802.16 again. Attempted, its original purpose was to provide a high-speed point-to-point connection, and it's main interest to us, again, is in its pretty much its contributions to the cellular world. It's been, WiMAX was very innovative in terms of the technologies used, the techniques used. As time's gone on, those have all been adopted in the cellular world. Okay. We won't look, we'll look at Bluetooth, but not really personal area networks. Okay, well, personal area networks refers to sort of, again, things that are just relative to the person. Bluetooth can be used for that, but in general, I would view Bluetooth as just, again, wire replacement system. Okay, and we'll have a quick look at Bluetooth. Okay. Ad hoc networks, again, we're not going to read them, just mentioning them as sort of yet more types of networks that use wireless technology. The idea behind a wireless, an ad hoc network is, again, you have a number of devices that communicate with each other, cooperate with each other to form a network without a lot of infrastructure. Okay. And you can think, again, of all those devices then moving. And then think about trying to get a message from point A to point B if all the relay points are moving all the time. And it becomes a very complicated problem. It's something, it's academics love it because, again, it's a good, hard problem. There's lots of mathematics you can throw at it. But it's sort of beyond the scope of what we're going to do here. Okay, and again, networking systems that use wireless go, there's loads more you can list. And so the main point to take away is, well, we will look at some of the more major versions. So again, we'll look at cellular systems, we'll look at wireless LANs, we'll look at WiMAX, but you do the wireless landscape. It's still very fragmented. There's, again, a lot of different solutions addressing specific needs and optimized according to specific requirements. Okay, these are all fighting with each other for spectrum. Okay. So, just to wrap up, what are we going to do in the module? Okay, and we're going to start down at the low-level stuff, the physical stuff. Well, we'll look at a basic radio transmission system, and so we'll start with how do you get a signal from point A to point B, a radio signal representing bits from point A to point B. And what are all the issues around that? Propagation, loss, signal encoding, etc. Okay, and then when we have some idea of, again, just how radio systems work, we'll look at cellular systems. And in particular, we're going to see how we achieve coverage and how we achieve coverage in an efficient manner. And we'll look at some basic traffic engineering to see, again, it's one thing to have an access point, how many people can actually connect to it. And so we'll have a look at that. We'll then look at actual cellular networks sort of as they're implemented, and we'll view that as sort of an evolutionary process. Okay. So we can look at various versions of the networks and see how they've evolved over time. Okay. Then again, we'll look at other networking solutions, again, ones that address various different points. So wireless LAN, broadband, wireless broadband, and again, with particular attention to the technological improvements that were introduced. And again, Bluetooth, just sort of an interesting topic. Okay, and finally, your assignment will look at, will be a simulation exercise using MS3. Okay, so that's all there is for today. Again, there's nothing examinable. As it's, again, that, you know, if you haven't had a networks course, then this would be referring to the master's students, obviously. Yeah, you can still get through this, but I would strongly recommend you pick up some textbook and just have a quick look at, you know, again, how basic data networks are constructed, because a lot of times we will be, for instance, drawing analogies between, you know, basic construction and how things are being done in the wireless world. So that's it for today. Enjoy the rest of the day, and I will see you guys next week.